A ban on central bank digital currency, one step closer to becoming a reality in the United States. We'll tell you more coming up today on Business Matters. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for being here with me today. I'm your host, Don Ma. We're starting off with markets as usual. So U.S. stocks today ended lower. This is because economic data showing inflation was still a concern, which could potentially delay Federal Reserve rate cuts. Stocks fell despite a strong revenue forecast for NVIDIA, prompted a surge in its shares. So what happened today was economic data showing that U.S. price pressures increasing in May as business activity accelerated, and also lower weekly jobless claims indicating the labor market remains on firm footing. So what it seems like right now is that good news still being greeted as bad news, which shows we're still very much in this mentality of what the Fed is going to do. And a lot of stories to go through today, and we're starting off with this. The House of Representatives has just passed a bill to stop the Federal Reserve from issuing a central bank digital currency. So CBDC is the digital version of a currency issued by a central bank. So in the U.S., it's also being called a digital dollar. The bill passed the chamber pretty much along party lines here. Minnesota Republican Tom Emmer sponsored the bill. He argues a central bank digital currency would threaten Americans' financial privacy. Meanwhile, Democrats say the bill would hold back American innovation. Here's ranking member of the Financial Service Committee, Maxine Waters, and Congressman Emmer.
There is nothing inherent about a CBDC that would compromise privacy. That is a design feature that is within our control.
If not open, permissionless, and private like cash, a CBDC is nothing more than a CCP-style surveillance tool that will ultimately be used to oppress our American way of life. If China embraces it, you know it's something worth standing against.
And joining me now to discuss central bank digital currency is research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, Joel Griffith. So, Joel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so, you know, the bill just passed, and you heard what Maxine Waters said, you heard what Tom Emmer said. So let me get your insight on this, right? Real simple, is this a step in the right direction for the United States or the step in the wrong direction?
Well, the issuance of a central bank digital currency would be an enormous step in the wrong direction. You know, the truth is the Federal Reserve does not have the power to issue such a currency, but we can't trust them not to act in opposition to what the law actually allows them to do. And for this reason, Congress is stepping in to prohibit them explicitly from issuing this. We know from recent years, the Federal Reserve often takes actions far beyond what Congress has actually mandated them to do. So I believe it is very prudent for the House to actually step in now to preemptively block them from issuing a type of currency that would be a threat to free enterprise and a threat to our privacy.
So we're talking about a wholesale block entirely of CBDC here. You think that is necessary?
It's absolutely necessary, and here's why. Once there is this type of digital currency issued by the central bank, there will be the possibility at some point in the future for government to actually track all of our transactions. In fact, there's a threat, if you look at what China is doing with their own version of CBDCs, that the government then could actually regulate the manner in which you spend those resources, the time in which you spend the resources. There would be the power to actually block you from engaging either in all transactions or in disfavored transactions. You think about right now the big push for us to decarbonize. Well, if you have this type of a currency allotted, you could very easily put in a mechanism that would only allow you to spend a certain amount of that currency on carbon-intensive activities, and you could build in, for instance, a tax on additional activities if you were to go over your carbon allotment. And if you look at what China's doing with their own version, they have a social credit score that is built in. So let's say that you are somebody who doesn't have a high enough social credit score. Well, those individuals in China can't buy certain type of train tickets, even though they have the financial resources to do so. Yet to replicate what the Chinese Communist Party is doing here in the United States would be a grave mistake.
So you're mentioning China here, right? Is there a real concern that the United States would actually follow in the Chinese Communist Party's footsteps?
I believe there is quite a concern, because there is a growing push in Washington, D.C., with bureaucrats, with Democrats, even with numerous Republicans, to regulate more of our economic lives. I mean, all we have to do is look back a few years ago during the pandemic, when the government was telling you when you could go out to eat, what kind of businesses you could frequent, and what times of day you could be involved in. But thanks to the fact that we actually have access to private cash and private checking and debit accounts, we were able to skirt a lot of those regulations. Imagine a world in which all transactions are done with a currency, a digital currency issued by our central bank that can be fully tracked. We would ultimately lose our freedoms or be under constant threat of losing those economic freedoms.
All right, let me present some counter arguments here from the other side. So the U.S. tackling inflation right now, CBDC could potentially help central banks see a clearer picture of what is happening and what is causing inflation and what can be done. It would allow for a more precise monetary policy. Besides that, could simplify tax collection. Wouldn't you say those are some benefits?
Well, on the inflation front, let's remember the central banks are largely responsible for the inflation that we're experiencing. And it's not because they lack tracking mechanisms of our currency or tracking mechanisms of our economy. The inflation that we're experiencing today is because our central bank printed trillions of dollars digitally to buy government bonds to allow our government to greatly expand over the past few years. That is why we have inflation. Furthermore, adding a CBDC to the arsenal of economic weapons the Fed has would actually increase the risk of inflation, because it would be far more easier for the central bank at the push of a button to magically increase the amounts of currency that each one of us, or a favored few of us, actually have access to. That would exacerbate inflation. And look, when it comes to taxes, none of us like paying taxes, and we certainly don't like filing those. It takes time. But to use that as an excuse to go ahead and arm the Fed with this new weapon, that's a very poor excuse. I don't see where the time savings would come near anywhere close to the risks involved of issuing a CBDC.
All right, so it passed the House today, this bill. The Senate is next, and then it's going to end up potentially on Joe Biden's desk if he decides to sign it. I mean, definitely some challenges here. What do you think needs to happen in order for this to become law?
Well, it would take the president signing into law or a veto-proof majority to pass it. That would take a supermajority in the House and Senate. Unfortunately, based on the vote this week, it does not appear that there would be such a supermajority. So I think that begs the question, well, what would happen if the Federal Reserve on its own chose to go ahead and issue this type of a currency? Well, if that were to happen, I believe there would be lengthy litigation filed against the Federal Reserve attempting to block it. Because, and here's, I think, where the crux of the argument would be, the Federal Reserve only has the power to do things that the Congress has actually enabled them to do. And if you look through the Federal Reserve Charter and the myriad pieces of legislation that were passed in following years, giving them different types of powers, they simply do not have that power. So I would be hopeful, but not fully confident, that the courts would block the Federal Reserve from issuing such a currency.
All right, let me do a follow-up question on a previous answer. So you mentioned about the time savings involved in CBDC is not worth it becoming a reality. So to put it simply, you're basically saying the concerns here outweigh the benefits.
Yes. Well, for those that are arguing that CBDC would greatly ease the paying of our taxes, here's what they're saying. They're saying that instead of each one of us getting to file our taxes at the end of the year and actually report what we believe our deduction should be and what our income was, they're saying, well, this is going to simplify that because we're not going to have to file it, because the Federal Reserve or the federal government is already going to have access to all of our financial data. Do we really want to live in a world where the government is going to make that decision preemptively for us regarding how much we owe, and then just simply sap our digital checking account for the amount that the government says that we owe? That is the inverse of the system we have today, where we file our taxes, We tell the government what we believe we owe, and if the government wants to challenge it, they can. But we are innocent in a way until proven guilty on that. If the IRS wants to challenge us for a deficient tax payment, they can go ahead and do so. They can sue us to collect, but they don't have the ability to just arbitrarily take those funds out of our account. So when you hear people saying, oh, a CBDC will go ahead and give us time and tax preparation, well, if you want the government just to be able to put their hand in your checking account and take what they say you owe, sure, that's true. But I, for one, certainly don't want to live in a country where our government has that type of power. That is indeed mimicking the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, Joel, very well spoken here today. Thank you very much for your time.
Really appreciate you giving me the chance to talk about this.
All right. Looks like it's time to break it up, and that's according to Attorney General Merrick Garland today, as the DOJ sues Live Nation for being an illegal monopoly. Live Nation says, of course, this is absurd. Let's go to NTD's Virginia Gibson now for more.
It is time to break it up.
The Department of Justice is suing Live Nation. Attorney General Merrick Garland says it uses illegal means to maintain its monopoly. According to the lawsuit, the company controls over 80% of primary ticketing, manages over 400 artists, and controls over 60% of concert promotions and over 60% of large amphitheaters.
The result is that fans pay more in fees, artists have fewer opportunities to play concerts, smaller promoters get squeezed out, and venues have fewer real choices for ticketing services.
The DOJ calls Live Nation's business model the flywheel, saying it earns money from concerts, uses that money to lock artists into exclusive promotion deals, and then uses its powerful cache of content to lock venues into long, exclusive deals.
It is through these exclusive ticketing arrangements that Americans face the dreaded Ticketmaster tax, the seemingly endless set of fees, ironically named service fee or convenience fee.
Assistant Attorney General Jonathan Cantor says Live Nation illegally eliminates rivals, retaliates against competitors, and threatens venues that work with competitors. Reddit users responded to the news with, "Took long enough. Now this is good news." And it's crazy it took this long for the parasites to be checked. Live Nation responded with a press release titled, "Breaking Down the DOJ Lawsuit." Despite the title, the release itself doesn't directly address any of the lawsuit's allegations. Live Nation says it is absurd to claim that Live Nation and Ticketmaster are wielding monopoly power, claiming its service charges aren't higher than its competitors. The company also presented a chart showing it has a lower profit margin than Meta, Apple, and Alphabet, three companies that aren't in the same industry as Live Nation. The company says this chart shows its lack of market power. Virginia Gibson, NTD News.
All right, so what else is happening in the business world? Of course, we have to mention NVIDIA here today. NVIDIA shares rallied over 9% after an upbeat earnings report late yesterday. Its shares crossed the $1,000 mark, a major milestone here for the company, whose stock soared more than 90% this year. Business has been booming at the chip maker. It is forecasting quarterly revenue far above estimates, and it's reinforcing investor confidence in the AI-driven chip demand. NVIDIA now expects new AI models that are capable of creating video and engaging human-like voice interactions to spur more orders for its graphics processors. And CEO Jensen Huang says that those systems are going to be quite large. The company also unveiled a 10-for-1 stock split yesterday and lifted its quarterly dividend by 150%. All right, next, the AI wave is also lifting up Taiwanese contract chip maker TSMC. So the company is a major supplier as well to NVIDIA and Apple. The chipmaker projected a 10% annual revenue growth in the global semiconductor industry, and that is excluding memory chips. TSMC has estimated its second quarter sales may rise as much as 30%. Now, staying on AI, OpenAI has signed a landmark content deal with News Corp. So the San Francisco-based AI company will now have access to content from leading publications. And as part of the deal, OpenAI has permission to display news content owned by News Corp as answers in its AI models. So publications here include The Wall Street Journal, New York Post, The Sunday Times, The Daily Telegraph, and more. OpenAI says the ultimate goal is to provide reliable information and news sources so people can make informed choices. As well, today, the Biden administration is pushing the tech industry and financial institutions to shut down a growing market of abuse in terms of sexual images made with artificial intelligence technology. Let's go to NTD Sean Marshall now for the details.
Generative AI tools are making it easier to create sexually explicit content from someone's likeness. The government is calling upon relevant industries to come up with ways to mitigate the problem and to help stop the sharing of such material in classrooms and across social media.
So celebrities, athletes, and politicians are the most vulnerable because they have the most available footage, if you will, for AI to learn from.
But the good news is that for someone on the receiving end of this abuse, there are things that can be done.
There are in existence now monitoring tools that can assist with that. And having those tools in place, along with the assistance of an attorney who can make sure that these deepfakes are known to be deepfakes and can be removed or taken down, is essential.
Charleston says that companies that have created these AI tools have the ability to prevent it from being used in harmful ways.
And they also have the capability to create these monitoring software systems, which could be used in conjunction with law enforcement to ensure that people's image and likeness are not wrongly portrayed in the public.
Wisconsin man Steve Enderegg has been arrested for allegedly using AI-generated images in the production, distribution, and possession of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct. He could face up to 70 years in prison. The case highlights the commitment of law enforcement to hold accountable those who exploit AI to create obscene and abusive images of children. Sean Marshall, NTD News.
Next, I have a quick update for you about a $600 million settlement for the Norfolk Southern derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. So a judge has given preliminary approval. The 2023 disaster spewed more than a million pounds of hazardous chemicals into the soil, water, and air. It also displaced many residents and businesses. The settlement to resolve all lawsuits related to the train crash was proposed last month. It covers thousands of residents within 20 miles of the derailment. Norfolk Southern didn't admit to any wrongdoing or liability in the settlement. A hearing for final approval is set for September 25th, and lawyers said they will meet community members over the coming weeks and months to answer questions about the settlement. They will also address how people can submit claims to receive compensation. All right, taking a quick break now. Coming up afterwards, China's Temu is now the most valuable e-commerce company in the country, and this is in part thanks to price-conscious American consumers who are turning to the platform for its cheap products. As well, if you're heading out of town over the next few days, well, make sure you pack some patience because this will be the most traveled Memorial Day weekend in decades. Stay tuned for travel tips after the break. Okay, thank you very much for sticking around here. Let me just go through with you some rapid-fire stories to keep you as much up-to-date as possible today. Tesla has left out its goal of delivering 20 million vehicles a year by 2030 in its latest impact report. This is another sign the company is tempering its auto ambitions as it shifts focus to autonomous driving as a primary growth driver. The automaker is set to unveil its robo-taxi dubbed Cyber Cab on August 8th. Tesla has also hit a speed bump in its EV sector as demand softens and competition intensifies. And a two-centuries-old American chemical company has announced plans to split into three publicly traded companies. DuPont plans to spin off its electronics and water businesses. The split up is expected to take up to 2 years. And Texans are cranking up their ACs to escape a heat wave for a second time. This week, power use was on track to break the record for the month of May. The state's power grid operator said the system is working normally and has enough available supply to meet expected demand. And SpaceX has launched its first batch of spy satellites, and this is part of a new U.S. intelligence network. It's designed to upgrade the country's space-based surveillance, and the goal is a vast system in orbit that can spot targets on the ground almost anywhere in the world. And some China-related news now. Temu is now China's most valuable e-commerce company. So according to data here, the Shanghai-based company reported that net profit soared 246% to $4 billion in the first quarter. So the strong results boosted shares for Temu owner PDD Holdings. Its market value shot up to more than $204 billion. Now, the surge comes from Chinese and American customers in part swarming to the bargain shopping site for deals. But, you know, PDD is facing potential regulatory hurdles in its expansion efforts internationally. Because earlier this month, a European consumer group accused Temu of using manipulative techniques to get consumers to spend more than they might want and called for a regulatory probe into the app. All right, and finally, we have today kicking off Memorial Day travel period for many Americans here. And this would be the busiest Memorial Day weekend in almost 20 years by experts' estimate. Here's some tips to help your travels go smoothly.
AAA predicts this will be the busiest Memorial Day travel period since 2005. It forecasts almost 44 million people will venture more than 50 miles from home. Today could be especially hectic on the roads.
Thursday and Friday are work days for most people, so you're going to have a mix of commuters, just people going to work, and travelers trying to hit the road.
AAA suggests planning ahead to avoid rush hour.
And have everything done ahead of time. So that means fill your tank the night before. Don't wait till that morning of. Pack an emergency kit. Pack up the car the night before if possible. Try to avoid running those last minute errands.
Officials also remind those enjoying festivities not to drink and drive.
If you feel different and you don't think you should be driving, you shouldn't be driving.
For air travel in particular, the FAA predicts the busiest Memorial Day period in 14 years.
Keep that in mind. People, when they travel these long holiday weekends, oftentimes they're not like the business traveler that sort of like moves quickly during, you know, through security. So just keep that in mind and give yourself just extra time.
Another potential factor this year is severe weather. Even those who avoid it en route could possibly encounter recent storm damage when they arrive.
All right, that's all the stories we have for you today. Thank you very much for watching. If you have any feedback for the episode, feel free to let me know. You can email us at business@ntd.com or leave a comment online. I do read them for every episode. And one last thing before we go, business matters. Goodbye, see you tomorrow.